Well, we started a series, as you know, called The Good Book, and we've talked about different things that take place in the scripture. You know, we talked about like David and Goliath. We talked about Moses. We talked about things that maybe some of you grew up hearing and maybe some of you didn't grow up in church. So some of the stuff is all new to you. We've even taken some of the Psalms. And then last week we talked about Proverbs, what it is, why it as a book matters to us. And so today we're going to talk about Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was a young prophet that God became an older prophet, and God used him. And we're going to talk about his book and kind of what took place in there. We'll spend our time in Jeremiah 1 today. So if you would, open up your Bibles to Jeremiah, the book of Jeremiah, chapter 1. If you're still learning your way around the Bible, know that there's an Old Testament and a New Testament. And Jeremiah is in the Old Testament. It's after Psalms. I think it's like Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentation. I think it's kind of how it goes. So anyway, somewhere in there. I only went to Bible school. So anyway, Jeremiah chapter 1. I can find it. I know where it's at. Jeremiah chapter 1. And so I'm going to read this to you, kind of this outline. It's actually from the book, The Good Book. He said this. He said, God's chosen people, the Israelites, lived as a united nation under the strong leadership of three kings. So while Saul was king, and then David became king, and then David's son Solomon became king, Israel was all one nation. After Solomon died, then a great civil war took place, and they split. There was a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. And so Israel was the northern kingdom, and Judah was the southern kingdom, and they coexisted under a tense truce for more than two centuries. So for two centuries, they existed like this. So they had two separate kings, each one of those. Well, Assyria was the world's first superpower, and it emerged during this period. Its foreign relations strategy could be summed up in one word, conquest. And so Assyria was bent on assimilating every nation within its reach of power. In 721 BC, Assyria conquered Israel. So they conquered the northern kingdom. They conquered that, and some of the Jewish survivors were deported to the Assyrian homeland. The survivors who remained in Israel eventually intermarried with their Assyrian conquerors, creating the Samaritan race. So you see, that's where the Samaritans came from, and probably one of the reasons why there was so much conflict between the Samaritans and the Jews from the southern kingdom is because the Samaritans were a mixture of the Jews and the Assyrians, who were harsh and cruel to the Jewish people. So that's where the Samaritans came from. And so it goes on to say that the northern kingdom of Israel was essentially obliterated. In other words, eventually it just was no more. Only Judah remained, but for how long? More than a century after the conquest of Israel, Assyria itself was swallowed up by a new big kid on the block, a nation named Babylon. Like Assyria, Babylon had visions of an ever-expanding empire. With Israel out of the way, the Babylonians licked their chops at the prospect of conquering the southern kingdom of Judah. So Israel is gone, you know, the northern kingdom. Judah, the southern kingdom, still exists, but Babylon wants it. And so Jeremiah was born in this craggy place in history. Babylon was threatening Judah from the outside. Political strife and religious corruption were destroying it from within. And yet the very events Jeremiah might have interpreted as inconvenient were in fact the making of his destiny. During this chaotic time, God was not silent. And so I want to talk to you about what God does and what happens in seasons of chaos. Right here, Jeremiah was in a season of chaos. He was in this time of real tension and conflict. How many of you have ever had a season of chaos before? I'm going to raise my hand. How many of you ever had a season of chaos? And so a lot of you had a season of chaos. Some of you struggle with lying. And so, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, man, so we've all, you know, if you've lived long enough, you go through seasons of chaos. There's things like that, man. Chaos is one of those things, is incredible struggle and challenge. And you know, one of the word pictures he gave, which I thought was interesting, is that, man, it does not matter. You can go out and you can give, you know, you can put weed kill on your grass and you can put all the right fertilizer on your yard that you want and that type of thing, and just, you know, and try to make your yard the prettiest. And yet in the crack in your sidewalk, some little weed will pop up. And it's just kind of the way that chaos is. It just kind of shows up, right? And so those things happen in life. So let's look and see what happened during this season of chaos for Jeremiah. So we'll start with Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 1. says this: these are the words of Jeremiah, son of Hilkiah, one of the priests from the town of Anathoth in the land of Benjamin. The Lord first gave messages to Jeremiah during the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, son of Amon, king of Judah. The Lord's messages continued throughout the reign of King Jehoiakim, Josiah's son, until the 11th year of the reign of the king Zedekiah. I'll be giving a test on these names later. And so, another of Josiah's sons. In August of that 11th year, the people of Jerusalem were taken away as captives. So in August of that 11th year, the people of Jerusalem were taken away as captives. The Lord gave me, just Jeremiah talking, the Lord gave me this message: I knew you before I formed you in your mother's womb. I knew you before I formed you in your mother's womb. I knew you before I formed you in your mother's womb. Before you were born, I set you apart and appointed you as my prophet to the nations. So God's revealing to Jeremiah, he said, man, before you ever were born, before you were even conceived, I knew you, I knew about you, I knew I had a plan for you. I knew you were going to be born into a season of chaos, and still yet, you know, I had a plan for you. I knew you then before you made your first mistake. Remember that God knew all the mistakes he would make, all the things that he would do in ignorance and all the sins he would commit willfully, and yet God still had a plan for him and called him. And I don't know about you, but that gives me hope. That God knew me before I made, you know, my first decision, before I made my first act of selfishness, that he knew me, and yet he had a plan for me. He knew how imperfect I would be. He had a plan for me. But here's Jeremiah in this season of chaos where he loves his people, and yet God's raising him up, and he's giving him a message for them. And so he's identifying, you know, to him, you know, the qualifications. Man, I knew you, and I'm the one that set you apart. But here's what I want you to know, is that God speaks to us during chaos. That's not the only time he speaks to us, but a lot of times, man, in chaos, we can be just kind of just all surrounded with just this place of chaos, and it takes so much of our energy. And it just can be such a distraction in what we do that sometimes, you know, it's just, we're just so overwhelmed and consumed by it that in that moment that we may not necessarily begin to listen to God. And yet God speaks to us in seasons of chaos. If you're in a chaotic season right now, I want to encourage you to turn your head, turn your attention towards God's voice for your life. And to listen to what he has to say in this moment, in this season for you. We started Cedar Point in 2006. And, you know, most of the year, you know, most of the time we were going through seasons of growth. And about 2017 or 18, it felt like we kind of hit this place that we'd kind of leveled off. And it just kind of frustrated me. I wasn't made to be a maintainer, just to kind of just maintain things. I mean, you know, you could look at my yard in New Mexico when we lived there and go like, that guy doesn't maintain stuff. And so I wasn't made to be that. And it was kind of frustrating for me. And then, you know, in 2018 and 2019, all of a sudden we started hitting a growth period again. And we were looking, we really believe that one of the things that was keeping us from reaching more people was that the facility we had was too small. It was like trying to put a big foot in a small shoe. It just doesn't work. And so we began to talk about that. We began to take this step of faith. And so the church was starting to grow, and it was exciting. And we were getting really close to starting the project and the plan, getting ready to present it to the congregation. And then we had this thing happen. Many of you probably haven't heard of it. It was called COVID. How many of you have heard of that situation taking place? Yeah. That was not chaotic at all, was it? I mean, it didn't impact anybody's life but just a few of us. No, man, it impacted all of us. And, you know, right at the beginning especially, you know, you're trying to figure out what's the right thing to do. And I know some people felt like they knew instantly what they were supposed to do. I didn't. I want to do the right thing, man. I feel like I have this responsibility for God's people. I want to make sure that I said what he wanted me to say. There was pressure from all so many sides to say different things. I'm like, Lord, this isn't mine. You know what? And it's not theirs. And it's not the government's. It's yours. What do you want? And then certain things began to happen. And our, you know, this growth that we had began to go. Ch-ch-ch-ch. And we put the building thing on hold. And we went from a place where we're like half the size that we were before. And I'll be real transparent with you. I was frustrated. And I was beyond frustrated. I was angry. Initially, it gets kind of scary. I wasn't mad at the government. I wasn't frustrated with them. I wasn't frustrated with wherever the virus came from. I was frustrated with God. I certainly had no reason to be. But to say that I wasn't would be dishonest. It'd be a lie. And I just remember like talking to the Lord, Lord, you could have stopped this. Why would you let this happen? And I thought about it from a personal end. You know, I said, man, I brought my family here. You know, we've given our lives to this. And I felt like, you know, we were starting to have the impact that we hope to have as a church. We want to make a difference here. Not just fill up a building, but change a community and an area around us. We saw that as real potential beginning to take place. And now we're just hanging on. And I don't want to use whiner's language. This is whiner's language. I began to say, this is unfair. It's unfair. And the Lord kept dealing with me. I mean, he was kind to me and loving. Now, he wasn't like, hey, I'm okay that you're being a big baby. I mean, he wasn't that way. But he was kind and he was patient. And what's wild is that in the year where everything kind of blew up, it was in March of that year, but in January, I always asked the Lord to give us a word for the year. And the word that he gave us in January was pursue. To pursue. And so March, things hit and everything just kind of comes to a stop. And for the next few months, just kind of trying to, because, you know, the other thing was, we're like, how long is this going to last? I don't know about you guys. I can handle, I love yes. I can handle no. I hate uncertainty. I hate that limbo where reality feels suspended and you're kind of just floating out there. That's where I felt like we were. And so as time went on, you know, just kind of seeking God and, you know, he'd been speaking to me, but I began to kind of turn, you know, my attention not towards the hard places or my frustrations or disappointments, but I began to really focus on what it is that he wants to do. And he kind of reminded me, like, I gave you your answer in January. The word I gave for the church is pursue. Do you think that fits in this moment when we don't know what to do, that maybe you're supposed to pursue what I've already given you to do? And so I remember, you know, I talked with the staff, we talked to the, you know, to our board and that type of thing, and just began to pray and seek God and really kind of landed on that's what we were called to do. And so we began to pick up where we left off, even though we were in a different place than we were the year before. Now, we wanted to operate in wisdom. Faith is no substitute for wisdom. But just in that moment where the world around us seems so uncertain, people are fighting over what's right, what should we do, what shouldn't we do, and both sides are passionate. Families are literally splitting up. Churches are splitting on, you know, what to do regarding services. And the only word that I had from the Lord is just pursue. Or just keep moving forward. And man, I have this testimony that from this day forward, in a season of life that had the most uncertainty that I've ever faced, and maybe for a lot of you it's the same way, that God spoke to me. He spoke to me. If you're in a position of chaos right now, when we read this with Jeremiah, as he looks around and his nation is being threatened, and God's raising him up to be a voice, to be God's voice to the people, that God's speaking to him in this season that seems incredibly chaotic, that people are making decisions that he can't control them. And yet God's still speaking to him. And so when we see, looking at Jeremiah here, we know this, that God speaks to us during chaos. If you're in a place of chaos right now, I want you to know that if you'll listen to God's voice, he'll speak to you from his word. He'll give you God thoughts. There'll just be convictions that you know. You'll just have an awareness of his leading or conversations that he'll lead you across. It's him giving you direction when it feels like there's no direction to be found or everything feels so uncertain that God still speaks to us in that moment. And so number one is God speaks to us during chaos. Let's keep reading down here. In verse 6, it says this, "O sovereign Lord, I can't speak for you. I'm too young." So he begins to lay out his insecurities and the things that he's challenged with. "I can't speak for you. I'm too young." The Lord replied, "Don't say I'm too young, for you must go wherever I send you and say whatever I tell you. And don't be afraid of the people, for I will be with you and will protect you. I, the Lord, have spoken." Then the Lord reached out and touched my mouth and said, "Lord, I have put my words in your mouth. Today I appoint you to stand up against nations and kingdoms. Some you must uproot and tear down, destroy and overthrow, and others you must build up and plant." So whenever God began to speak to him and began to reveal to him what he was supposed to do, that the very first thing that Jeremiah began to talk about were his own insecurities. Now, here's what I know. All of us, everybody say all of us. Look at the person next to you and say, "This means you." All right, all of us have insecurities. We all, yeah, now you can stop talking to them now. Don't get their phone number. Okay, but all of us have insecurities. You know, we all have those things in our life. Now, and then there's certain things. I will tell you this much, that until I got into my 20s, I didn't realize how many insecurities. And then I had, and then when I got married, I really began to realize how many insecurities that I had. And so my wife helped bring those out of me. And so I have that. You know, those things that she did. And so so we have those, and all of us have those things. A lot of times, man, they were created in our childhood through, a wound that took place, and we didn't know how to process it as kids. And so it just became this place that we kind of guarded, and we didn't want to move past because we had this level of insecurity. And so then, you know, whenever God begins to speak to us, and he begins to give us things that seem so huge, that seems so huge that all of a sudden our insecurities, they come up and they begin to say to us, "Well, yeah, you can't do that. You can't do it." I'm amazed at how many things in my life I've said to the Lord. And I wasn't trying to be rebellious or whatever. I'm like, "God, just don't use me for this." You know, there are times where I said, "Hey, I don't want to be a youth. I don't think I'm called to youth ministry. I'll go anywhere you want me to, Lord. But clearly, you know, I'm kind of awkward in church around teenagers. Just so call me to do that." And he said, "Okay." And for like the next 18 years, I did youth ministry. And so then I said, I can see myself if I pastor someday taking over a church, but I don't think I'll ever start a church. It's just not me. That's him saying, see? And so, I got the message. So, yeah. So, you know, so I said, "I'll never start a church." And so he said, "Okay." And so in 2006, he left us from he called us from a place of security to start a church. Now, I've told him since then, "Hey, don't ever give me like a summer home in Hawaii." And so I'm waiting for him to like come through on that. But I think he knows, you know, when we mean it. But the truth of the matter is that so many times when God speaks to us, especially in a season of chaos, that our insecurities already are that narrative in our head that gives us all the reasons why we can't and all the things that disqualify us, whether they're our gifts or our abilities or our sins from the past or the family that we come from or how we were raised or how young we are or how old we are or any of those things, that those things begin to rise up. So you can't do that because of, and it begins to give that, you know, because of what's taking place in your life or because of who you are. And yet God speaks to those insecurities. I will tell you that in everything that God's, every major thing that God's called me to do, that in order, there was always an area in my life that had a big uh-uh. A big I'm not, no. And yet he was, you know, it was just, his presence was just relentless. It wasn't bullying, but it was relentless in pushing me that way. And one of the most recent ones is that when we started Cedar Point, I knew that a huge part of our vision would be for the community and the surrounding communities, that we were going to be good to our community and to the people in our community. That was going to be our huge mission. Jesus said to the disciples, he said, you know, be a witness in Jerusalem. That was the community that they lived in. It was the very first place that he said to be a witness in. Then Judea, the surrounding areas, and then Samaria, the places you don't want to go, and the ends of the earth. And so, I had people that I'd had opportunities to kind of go overseas a couple of times and just, you know, look for a way to get out of it. One time I was going to go to South Africa, and I got to the airport in New Mexico in Albuquerque, and my dad took a turn for the worse, and so I didn't even get on the plane. I turned back around and drove back to Tulsa. Another time, I was supposed to go to Italy, got on the plane, got to Dallas, and a situation came up, and I had to catch a car and get off that connecting flight to Italy and drive back to the area. One time, I had an expenses paid. Some organization wanted to take pastors over to Israel, and I said, doesn't work that day. I think I've got a haircut. I mean, so there are just different things going on, taking place in my life. And so, and you know, some people, man, they just have a heart to go overseas. Now, I like supporting foreign missions. You know, we want to reach out to people in different parts of the world. I see the need of it, but just honestly, it was just never in me to go. And part of it was just this element of anxiety and fear. Well, a little over a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, we had this couple named Jim and Tamara Graff. They came and spoke at our church, and they had connections with these ministries in India, this one that started hundreds of churches in India, and this other that had started children's homes. And he said, Rick, I think you should really go to us. I want to take you with us to India. And I was like, okay, good. You know, I mean, it was one of those. And so I said, oh, I felt like I was supposed to go. And so I said, okay. And there were several months. I think that was like maybe in August. And then this was supposed to take place in March. And so I said, okay. So I had 7 months to figure out a way to get out of it. But just as time went on, I just couldn't get away that I was supposed to go. And I just had this thing like, I'll help somebody go, man. We'll send people as a church. I'll help personally. But I want to go to India. I love the people there. I just want to go there. There's so much uncertainty in it for me. I'm not 30 anymore. I know that surprises some of you. But I want God to use me here for us to grow something that we send people. And I don't want to be the people we send. So, but the Lord just wouldn't let me go. And so, I mean, he wouldn't let me out of that. And as we got closer, and I just, you know, the Lord kind of began to remind me of some things. He reminded me of this, that I belong to him. I'm not my own. Somebody came up to me that was they did missions. And they said, I don't know if you're aware of this, you know, because India is a democracy, but they said they're like 11th on the watch list for Christian missionaries. I said, thank you. That's just what I needed to hear. And the Lord just kept reminding me, your life's not yours. You made a decision years ago to give it to me, to do with it whatever I choose to do for my glory. And I remember somebody else had an opportunity to go. They said, I'm not going to go. And they had some anxiety. And they said, you know, I have some fear. And I said, well, I do too. But the Lord just kept speaking beyond my insecurities. He didn't remove them from me. Did you know that? It wasn't like he said, well, there they go. They're not there anymore. He made me push through them. He made me push past them. Our insecurities are amplified during chaos. But I've just discovered there's so many things that God wants us to do, that in order to do this, he causes us to have to push through our fears, through those things that say that we can't, or that we're not good enough, or that we failed too many times, or that there's just too many mistakes in our past, or people know who you are, or people won't believe that you will do that thing, or you're too young, or you're too old, or you've made this mistake, or you don't know enough, or who do you think you are, your family's this family. And the Lord's like, he told Jeremiah, don't say you're too young. I know how old you are. I'm calling you. Don't say you've made too many mistakes. I know how many mistakes you've made. I'm calling you. And I just remember God dealing with me with that. And it seems like every major thing in my life that he's ever wanted to do through me, that he wanted to put me in a position that my insecurity caused me not to be able to lean upon myself, but to rely upon him and put it in his hands. I remember getting on that plane, and this may seem kind of dramatic, but it's just a reality of where I was, because I'd never done this before, and especially never been to a place that was, you know, it was just a few percent Christian. In December, like the year before, on Christmas Day, the Indian government had cut off all foreign support for hundreds of Christian ministries inside of India, one of them even being Mother Teresa's orphanage. The prime minister had said, India for Indians, and Hindu is Indian, is India. So that was the mindset of the nation that I was going into. And so I was like, you're right, Lord, my life's not yours. And I wasn't like bold or braggadocious, man, on the inside. I dealt with so much anxiety. But there's something about God when our world is chaotic. He doesn't disappear in the chaos. He shows up and still speaks to us to let us know what he has for us. And he calls us to push past our insecurities. You know, we did a capital campaign a few years ago to get to this place. We're going to have to do another one here shortly. It's going to require me to do some things that I hate doing. It puts me in an uncomfortable place of asking people to, hey, partner with us on this. But I know in order for us to get to the place that God has called us to get to and to reach the people that we have yet to reach, that it requires all of us to be uncomfortable, and it starts with me. But if you're in chaos right now, don't get so overwhelmed and consumed that you've stopped listening for what God's voice is in this moment, in this season. And don't think for a minute that he's going to just let you hide until the chaos is over. No, he's probably calling you in the middle of it to stand up and do something and to be his voice in chaos, because when there's chaos going on, people need to hear his voice more than anything. They've got the voice of chaos in their life. They've got the voice of fear and the naysayers in their life. They need somebody that will take God's voice in the middle of chaos and push through their own insecurities and realize that there are things that may be a struggle for them, but the reality of it is, as they stand in that chaos, they get to give people hope and they get to give them directions. They become God's voice in that moment, and that's what he calls us to do. And so number two is this, is that obedience requires us to push past our insecurities. Let's look at this third one. We'll start with verse 17. So God says this to Jeremiah. He says, get up and prepare. Everybody say prepare. Get up and prepare for action. Go out and tell them everything I tell you to say. Do not be afraid of them, or I will make you look foolish in front of them. For see, today I have made you strong like a fortified city that cannot be captured, like an iron pillar or a bronze wall. You will stand against the whole land, the kings, officials, priests, and people of Judah. They will fight you, but they will fail. For I am with you, and I will take care of you. I, the Lord, have spoken. Here's the thing that also he told Jeremiah is that, man, in this season that God calls us to prepare for what he's called us to do. Here's the thing I know is that there are some things that God can do in a seemingly only in those chaotic seasons. There's some things that it's hard to prepare us when things are good, when there's peace and we've got confidence about what tomorrow looks like. But man, something about those seasons when I'm unsure, uncertain. I'm unsure about my abilities. I'm unsure about, you know, the things that are supposed to take place that I have no control over whatsoever. That when I look back on it, it was in those moments that God was preparing me for things that he had for me. That it was him preparing me for things that he wanted to do in my world and in my life. You know, I know that, you know, when I was coaching, and it was such a big thing to me that I didn't realize at the time that while I was coaching that thing that I said I would never do, which was be a youth minister, was the place that God was choosing to prepare me and equip me for that moment that he was calling me to. And then I remember we had this youth ministry that was growing and it began to get recognition. And at one time, you know, per capita, it was like the largest one per capita in the country as far as reaching the county that we were in. But it also faced the most persecution I'd ever faced in my life. I didn't know at that time that he was preparing me to not just be part of leading a place, but to lead a place and the things that come with that. That in so many of those seasons that are uncomfortable, that are chaotic, that I feel like there's an element of limbo where I don't know where the finish line is. And I don't know how we get there sometimes. All I know is that this is what God has called me to do. And this is what I'm supposed to do. And that if I'll just stay faithful to that, that I'll end up where I'm supposed to be. That in those moments, that there's a work that God's doing in me to prepare me for that place that he's taking me to that requires me to go through the chaos to get there. And that's what he's doing for you. He's preparing you. Preparing you. If you're in a season of chaos right now, if you're not doing this, begin to listen for God's voice. Begin to ask him what he wants to do in this moment, in this season. Begin to endeavor to hear him. You know, whenever your insecurities, that narrative in your head, those voices begin to tell you that you can't do it, and here's why, and tries to disqualify you. Let God's voice be the one that reminds you that, hey, I'm the one that's called you. And I'm not looking, first of all, you need to be available. I'll equip you. You be available. You be yielded. And let me lead you and push past our insecurities to get us to the place that he's called us to go. And as we do that, then God begins to give us direction and he begins to show us what it is that he wants us to do. Number three is God calls us to prepare for what he's called us to do. So chaos, man, as unsettling as it is, as uncertain as it feels, it's amazing the great things that God does in that and the things that he shows up in that moment. I go back to when the disciples are in a storm, that Jesus shows up in their storm. And even with Peter's like, man, if it's you, then tell me to come. He goes, well, come. And Peter goes out and he begins to walk. And then it says he begins to sink. I never begin to sink. I just sink. So it probably looked like he was walking down steps. He's like, man, this is either I'm getting shorter, this water's getting deeper. And eventually he cries out for Jesus and Jesus lifts him up. Now I think the next thing is so interesting that if I'm Peter, then I'm looking at Jesus like, could you calm the storm? Like that's why you can't walk on water. But Jesus takes Peter to the boat with the storm still going on. And it's not until they get back in the boat that Jesus calms a storm. And there's just elements of preparation that take place when we learn to walk with Jesus in the storm, in the chaos. And Jeremiah, this young man that God had this great call in his life, as his people are in they're in a period of survival, and so much of it feels unknown, that God says, look, I'm calling you to speak in this season of chaos. And his insecurities go, I'm too young. And he goes, don't say that. I've called you. Before you were ever born, I called you. Speak my words. They have nothing to do with your age. They're about the wisdom and the faith and the purpose of God. And then he said, prepare because of what I have for you to do. It's the beauty of chaos when we walk with God in it. I want you to do this. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes for just a minute. Oh, Father, I just come to you and I pray for each person that's in here. I pray, Father, that for each individual that's in this moment that's dealing with chaos in their life, I pray that all of a sudden that your voice would begin to resonate with them, that they would begin to recognize your voice in this moment as to what you're speaking to them about. That's what you're calling them to do in this season. And Father, as their insecurities begin to speak up, their failures, their inadequacies, their past, their present, their legacy, their history, that your voice begins to speak to those things and reminds them, I've called you. I know those things about you and I've called you. And that, Father, they see this as a season not to draw back, not to hide, but to move forward, being your voice in the chaos as you use this season to prepare them. So I pray over every life, especially for those that are in a season of chaos right now, that feel like they don't have control of certain things, that just feels so chaotic. God, let them sense the steadiness and the security of you, that you're the rock that we run to. You're the shield for us. You're our high tower that we take refuge in. Let's just take a moment just there in your seat, just in that secret place, in the place only you and God see. I'm just going to give you a moment just to talk to Him and let Him speak to you in this moment.